And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello out there and welcome to Jurassic Pod. My name is Eric Corrine. Joining me, as always, my colleague, my friend, my pal, Holly McKenzie. Holly, how you doing?
Hi, doing a little better than last week. You?
It's been a week. It's hopefully we don't get in too recappy of a mode, but there is terrain to cover.
Raptors fans will be just fine with you briefly recapping the events of the past week.
Yeah, so last time we spoke to you, it was 0-2. Raptors had gotten blown out in Philadelphia twice. One lost by 20 and then by 15. And it got worse. Their performance got better, but they lost game three in overtime, 104-101. You know, missed free throws, missed jumpers, missed assignments on a Joel Embiid game winner.
Game-winning shot it was.
Yeah, like no matter how much the Raptors screwed that up, it was still very, very cool and impressive to see a 7-foot dude spin and fire a three. And that guy, by the way, has torn ligaments in his shooting thumb. Pretty impressive feat of basketballing, that shot, even if the Raptors screwed it up, which they did in a few ways. Maybe we'll get into it, maybe we won't. It happened a while ago now, so it only makes sense to belabor it so much. With their backs against the proverbial wall, they played for pride, Holly, and won 110-102, forcing the series back to Philadelphia when the Sixers were going to obviously close it out and, you know, in front of a raucous home crowd, and they did not. The Raptors, with their best game of the series by quite a distance, win by 15, hold the Sixers to 88 points. Embiid, Harden, and Maxey all probably with their worst games of the series in that one. Certainly Maxey was the least dangerous in that one, as they appeared to be sort of daring him to drive and not giving up the threes, and he's very fast and he can make you pay with that, but the Raptors defense is sort of on a different level. And I think that's probably where we have to start, compare, like, just big picture compared to what we were talking about last time. The headliner has to be the defense, right?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Also, we should quickly mention, without getting super deep into the injuries, that the Raptors were essentially without Fred VanVleet for the last two games, the two wins. Fred left
the second quarter of game four
with a hip injury, walked off the court, ripped his jersey. You knew something was not good, not well in that moment. It was a hip injury. He didn't return. He did not play in game five in Philadelphia, and he is listed as doubtful for
game six on Thursday. And like when he spoke to us on Monday morning before game five, he, without ruling himself out, he basically ruled himself out for the series. He you know, his comment was basically, if we can get into the second round, I'd feel really good about my ability to come back in that series. So,
and on the surface, you would be really worried about that. Like, you, if you said, oh, the Raptors will be without Fred VanVleet, their all-star disaster. But when you look at the version of Fred that we've seen in this series, specifically defensively, since we're talking about defense. And that's I'm looping us back to to where you started.
I see where you're going. I see the path. Yeah.
You see the vision?
Yeah.
It hasn't been all bad for the Raptors. In fact, they've really found something defensively. And yeah, Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah, and let's not get it twisted. Like, the Raptors are better with Fred VanVleet.
Yes, of course.
The thing you can argue is the Raptors are better against this team without an injured Fred VanVleet. Like, the version that was trying to play through his myriad injuries, which we know include a knee injury, which we know now includes a hip injury, and we don't know what else there is. But, you know, he was not that this is the world's greatest crime, but he couldn't stay in front of Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah, pretty much the, like, the most difficult assignment. Fastest player probably in the league, I would say.
Yeah, it's like one, you know, if you're going to pick guys, like maybe Ja Morant is a worse assignment, and then it's like Maxey. He's right there in terms of, you know, certainly in terms of guys who aren't primary on the ball, like dominating guys, you know, trying to stay with him as he catches and drives. My God, and you're rotating back to him because, you know, you're playing at a team defense that requires helping a lot against Joel Embiid in particular, but also against Harden at times. And so you're rotating back and you're trying to, you know, go from moving to stationary in front of your man, and your man happens to be the fastest kid alive, to quote Officer Michaels from Superbad. Like, it's tough.
I have to tell you, I read your piece and... Yeah. You quoted that, and I had no idea what that was, so now I know.
Well, that's why I included the link.
I didn't click the link. I don't have time to click links. I'm here for the words, not the jokes.
Yeah.
Holly McKenzie, not about fun.
Yeah, no, I know. I have to bring the fun to this podcast. But, you know, so let's, in game three, the Sixers score 104 in overtime. Game four, they score 102. Game three, down
88.
I don't have the points per possession in front of me, but, you know, that's sort of the way it seemed, is that this defense is getting progressively better. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Embiid's thumb issue has a lot to do with that. We've certainly seen him turn the ball over and look, you know, unless he's getting a deep paint post touch, he looks a lot less effective operating from, you know, the elbow or even the 3-point line. It's been less dangerous. Mm-hmm. And this defense is collapsing and recovering and collapsing and recovering. And sometimes if it's Precious Achiuwa on Embiid on the perimeter, or if it's OG Anunoby, my God, on James Harden on the perimeter, like, there doesn't have to be collapsing because those guys just aren't getting beat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see, like, we've talked all season about Precious and the improvements he's made, but to get to see it all kind of come together right now in the playoffs against a team where his defense is so needed. And then you mentioned OG, bringing OG up too. I think when the Raptors first, you know, the trade happened and Precious came here, everyone knew he was really young and he was still a raw player with a lot of talent and tons of upside, blah, 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 blah. He's still crazy young. But you see, like you mentioned OG and he's not getting beat. Neither's Precious. You kind of see that vision of like, oh, this is the vision that the team, that the front office was having when they were putting this team together.
Yeah. Like, it's great if you can switch everything, but what if, like, you just don't get beat? To focus on Precious Achiuwa, because I think when you think about game five,
it's also just really cool to have a player that can guard Joel Embiid and James Harden.
Yeah, that's neat.
Like, it's a bonus.
But what I really liked about game five from Precious Achiuwa, and I think, like, after Siakam, he's probably the first guy I'll think about when I think about that game, is Ken Burch did like a really good job to start on Embiid specifically. Like the physicality, you could see why he was starting on him. Mm-hmm. He picked up his fouls, but like Embiid wasn't getting those, you know, deep paint touches. And Achiuwa came in and replaced him. And those paint touches in the first quarter came for a bit. And as the game went on, they just didn't. And mm-hmm. whether that's like him doing his fighting in the post or for positioning earlier, whether it's Embiid tiring, which he certainly looked to on the defensive end, certainly in the third quarter, that, you know, I think you talk to pretty much anybody, and that was the worst stretch of Joel Embiid's defense in the third quarter that I've seen in the last 3 to 4 to 5 years. And I'm sure that people who pay more attention to Sixers would probably say something similar. But back to Achiuwa, like he adjusted and kept the energy level up and kept, you know, using his advantages against Embiid, which are speed and agility and just an ability to at least, like, when he does get it into the rim, like, at least contest vertically, mm-hmm. he's using all those things. And that's not to say he's doing it himself. He's certainly not. And Embiid, when he shoots, is still scoring pretty damn efficiently. But those opportunities, I think he only got to the free throw once in the second half of game five, which is huge. Like that,
he had
that was
six free throws total.
Yeah, and that, as Nick Nurse said, after like the Raptors won the free throw battle in game four, they lost, I think, 20-13 in game five. Mm-hmm. But in general, those are like numbers that not, I mean, even the game five number, like that's sort of what you expect based
you
on these teams'
that.
Profiles. Yeah, yeah. You that I think that was Nick Nurse's actual quote. You
oh,
can
really?
Work with that. Yeah. Okay. I'm not positive, but it was certainly along the lines of that. And that's a credit to the whole team, but also Precious Achiuwa. So, like, is there one play, one moment, something that stands out about Precious's play over the last few games?
I don't know if there's a moment, but it's kind of similar to what you said. It just feels like over the course of the game, his constant presence and constant contesting and constant challenging, like. He's making everything difficult. And as the game goes on, I mean, I think regardless of what happened this series, Joel Embiid's going to get tired. Most players get tired as the series goes on, you know? But then yeah. He also has this injury. He's having to play huge minutes. They could barely rest him in the second half.
He got 2 minutes off. Yeah. And that stint is usually closer to 4 or 5.
They're having to keep him out there longer. And just the fact that they're making... I say they, and I do mean they as the team, but specifically Precious, is making him work so hard and making everything so difficult for him. I think it does tire him out, and it is making it more difficult. And not that it's going to deter him away from wanting the ball or taking shots or, you know, like he's still going to be Joel Embiid. But I think that you're really seeing just his efficiency going down. Not like you said, he's still very efficient, yes, but it's making him tired, and you're really seeing that on the defensive end, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that stretch where OG Anunoby dunks on him, not on him, that's a bit strong, but goes by him and dunks. Precious had 2 layups, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think Siakam got a layup and somebody else drew a foul. Like that, you don't see that. Like Joel Embiid... Mm-hmm. Like, is one of the best defenders in the NBA and one of the most impactful defenders in the NBA. And
he's also, you know, the leading scorer, and he finished with 20
points. And he's also the leading scorer in the NBA.
And he finished 20 points in game five. Like, you can really see the toll, I feel like, that attention is taking on him.
Yeah. And so let's, like, zoom out. Like, Precious Achiuwa is part of the reason... For the season, you know, like for the Raptors, like part of the reason is to get this guy who you think you hope mm-hmm. is going to be part of your future is to make sure he's contributing.
And just like, stop and think about the beginning of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Especially offensively, like think about where he was. And now mm-hmm. like to look at the player he's becoming and the player he has been in this series, it's kind of wild. Like it's wild.
Maybe he's you get one people, of those.
He's making guys have to come out and guard him. He's making guys have to not let him be open at the 3-point line. Like, it's wild. I wouldn't have believed it if you would have told me that at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and maybe like there's one of those mistakes a game. You know, the free throws are the free throws at the end of game three, and you know, it happens. It sucks, mm-hmm. but it happens. But like the mistake, like not only is he playing well and playing impactfully, but just the mistake percentage is going down. It's, you know, that's not a stat other than turnovers, but like he is maybe still a bit of an adventure off the ball on both ends, but you know, on the ball on both ends, he is a lot better.
And it's a good adventure.
Yeah. More often than not. Yeah.
And like you said, like so much of this season has been about getting reps and opportunities and moments and experience for players like Scotty and like Precious. And this is huge for him. And it's really cool to just get to see him taking so much advantage and kind of in a way just like proving what the front office was excited about in him in live time.
Let's maybe not judge trades the minute they happen or don't happen, as was the case with
I sort of just mentioned him, but if you heard that beep, I'm sorry. That's my mom texting me, just asking if the Raptors play tonight. No, Mom, they do not. She's asked me this every day since game five.
You should just share a Google Calendar.
Has the link to the schedule, but she just like, it's her, you know, I think it's just like, anyway. No, Mom, they play tomorrow. They play on Thursday. Yes. Which is tomorrow. Today is Wednesday. Scotty, sorry, I lost my train of thought. We mentioned this season, the reason for this season being getting Precious and Scotty time and seeing what they could do. Since we last spoke to you, Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, he's back.
Big Roy energy, baby. I added the energy.
Yeah. And they've needed him, like, especially with Van Vliet leaving. Like,
He got to win the Rookie of the Year award, get presented the award, and also return to the floor, which is crucial. Yeah. I mean, I know I wasn't at the game in Philadelphia. You were on the broadcast. It definitely did look like he was limping quite a bit at the end of the first half and then a bit in the second.
That's when because that was right in front of me at the end of the first half when he was limping, and it was the first time I'd noticed it. And for what it's worth, Nick Nurse said he thought he came through practice on Wednesday pretty well. Obviously, Scotty wasn't going to say, he's like, yeah, I feel some pain sometimes, but it's fine. What else was he going to say?
Right.
But, you know, let's just talk about the basketball for a minute before we get into, you know, the deep, deep specifics. With Van Vliet leaving, like, they need another guy to set things up. And especially if they want to stay big defensively, they need this guy setting things up. And I think he's clearly lacking some of the offensive burst in terms of create. Like, he had a few plays in game five, I would say, but like,
his assists in game five?
We'll get there.
Okay.
So, like, in terms of, like, what's different about this guy from his peak performance, I would say that's it. Like, there's just less burst to offensively to get to the rim himself. But, you know, just the ball handling and the passing with the load that Pascal Siakam is carrying, and don't worry, we'll get to Siakam, who's been awesome, but like that is just such a huge thing for like a half court offense that's actually functioning half decently, better than in the, I haven't compared the numbers, but I'm sure their points per possession in the half court in this series are better than it was over the playoffs. So that's pretty good.
Over the playoffs?
I'm guessing. We don't need to fact check that right now. But yeah, like Scotty, on the glass and creating, it's been much, much needed. You wanna talk about those back to back assists?
In
transition.
Fourth quarter. The Philly crowd all night had been like in and then extremely out of the game. Like it was very much like they're cheering, they're loud, they're out of the game, they're booing, they're back, they're cheering, they're out of the game, then they're booing, then they're not really there, they're pretty quiet. You know, like it felt very drastic swinging from TV. I don't know if it was like that in person.
So I had earphones in because the earphones. I had earplugs in because, if possible, like the game operations was louder there than at Scotiabank Arena. So like the cheering never seemed that loud to me, but that could have been the earphones. Like the booing seemed constant, or not constant, but like
it definitely like seemed prevalent. More noticeable than the cheering. I feel like more intense.
But yeah, but I want to get to what you wanted to talk about with Scotty's assist, because when he threw that first assist, which I believe was to Thad Young, it was right after the Sixers had cut it to 7 or 8 in the fourth quarter, and like Tyrese Maxey was like asking for noise at that point. Like, I don't think the fans obliged him to like the level you would hope for as like a home player. Like, you know, I always go back to 1992 and the World Series, and Dave Winfield wanted noise from the notably, you know, sort of staid Toronto fans. But, you know, we've heard that, you know, Raptors crowds get really, really loud at points. And again, I was wearing earplugs. I can't say for certain. But that was like when Scotty Barnes came up with those two assists, the first to Thad Young, the second to look, I'm not going to call it a no look. But
Scotty's patented no look.
It was a look away, alley-oop pass to Precious Achiuwa. Like that sequence was, you know, maybe second behind Siakam's pass to OG Anunoby with like 3 minutes left for the three-pointer. Like those were in my mind the two big moments of the game of like, is this team, are the Sixers going to make a real run or not? And like those three baskets were the clearest answers that no, they're not going to make
the Scotty back to back. And just the way that he did it, it was so like signature Scotty. It just felt like it sucked everything out of that arena. Not that it was like crazy, crazy before, but it was just like the final, like the chair was pulled, the rug was pulled, whatever the saying is. Like, you know, it was just like, okay. And then the OG play was like, yeah, we're done here. Like, see, you know, I don't know where you're going. I'm going back to Toronto kind of thing. But yeah, no, just classic Scotty. And the no look away.
Whatever you want to call it.
It works, but it shouldn't, because you know exactly, like everyone knows exactly what he's doing. And yet...
I'm not sure the looking away had anything to do with completing that pass. I don't think it caused like the Sixers defender any hesitation, but you know, like an alley-oop to Precious Achiuwa is going to work on a 2-on-1 or whatever the
situation is. It's just the extra thing.
Yeah, no, it's the panache. It's the showmanship. It's like, you know, that stuff matters. Like, you love to see it. I guess is my way of summing that up.
No, it was awesome. I did know one thing that kind of surprised me about game 5. Yes, I keep forgetting which game we're on. I don't know. This doesn't really fit with what we were talking about, but it did surprise me that the Raptors only had 3 offensive rebounds in that game. And I know they shot like 51% from the floor. But that was something that I was kind of wondering, like with Scotty, like, because you mentioned like his burst being gone offensively and things like that. I do kind of think we're noticing that on the offensive glass, just like the little plays that he normally would be there for, being quicker than anyone and you know, being there. I don't think he has that, but it doesn't even, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but like the amount of good that he has brought since returning it's been huge, especially as you mentioned with Fred being out. And then I know we mentioned Scotty. I really quickly just wanted to mention that Gary Trent also is back, has been great, and looks like himself again. And he said after game 3, which obviously the Raptors ended up losing, but he said he felt 100%. He said he lost 8 pounds in the week of being sick. Yeah, not good. He felt terrible, lost 8 pounds, was weak, tired, all of those things. So like if you were watching game 1 and were like, what is going on? That's what was going on. But to hear him say he felt 100% and how badly he wished that he felt this way in game 1, again, woulda, coulda, shoulda, doesn't make sense to go back in time. But it is interesting just to think, like, where would we be right now had Gary and Scotty played the first two games, had Thad not gone out with a thumb injury? I know the Sixers could say the same thing with Joel and his thumb injury, but it's just for something sure to think about. Raptors look like a completely different team with Gary and Scotty.
Yeah, and I'd say if we're looking at matchups, the interesting thing about Game 5 is, you know, it was sort of the first time fully healthy Gary was might have to contend with Matisse Thybulle. And for one, Thybulle spent more of his time on Anunoby and Siakam. And two, that leash is short because that was like self-parody of what people say about Matisse Thybulle, like a zero on offense and like, but him, you know, and I know
his
like
only basket was tipped in by Precious Achiuwa.
But like defensively, he was really impressive. And like him on the outside of a zone, like denying entry passes, great. But if he's, you know, I would assume if there's a game 7, he'll get at least a short look to see if he has a few shots in him. But that, you know, he's not going to play much, I would guess, in game 7. So that's not as much of a factor as we thought it might be.
It's also just a weird situation, like for him to only be playing certain games. It's like you wonder how that affects it, but whatever, that's another.
Yeah, you can eliminate some of the variables if you choose. And if you choose not to,
here you go.
I feel less inclined to discuss them.
Thank Precious for the bucket. And anyway, I did, again, we mentioned Pascal playing well. I think two of the biggest things for me, I guess, after game 3, when he was scoreless in the second half, correct?
He certainly went 0 for 5.
Scoreless from the floor in the
Remember if he had a free throw or two, but he went 0 for 5 in the second half and overtime.
Second half and overtime of game 3. That was game 3, yes. Mm-hmm. I saw you taking the drink and was like, he's not going to be able to correct me, so I'm just going to try to extend this. But that was game 3.
Yes.
After that, he sounded really surprised after the game, and I think the next day at practice when someone asked him about it, he sounded like he was unaware that, you know, he didn't have a lot of shots.
No, I agree.
He hadn't
made
any. And he responded in a huge way in their next two games. He's been awesome all around. In their game 4, he had 34 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. In the game 5, he had 23, 10, and 7. But I think one of the things, like, obviously that's so important for the Raptors, but one of the other things that has just been really impressive to me is with Fred out, he has even more responsibility offensively and taking care of the ball and setting people up. And, you know, his minutes also, he had played 44 minutes in both of those games. I don't see that coming down at all. I think they're probably going to go up in whatever's to come. But it's just an even heavier load than what he was carrying before, which was already a pretty heavy load. And he has been awesome.
Yeah, game 4 was amazing. Like, I don't have much to say about it. Like, everything was working. Game 5, to me, was almost more impressive because he didn't have it going at the beginning. He was not finding like the soft spots in the defense. He, you know, they weren't able to create as much spacing out because, you know, Van Vliet was out there to start game 4, and whatever you want to say about him, like, he does give you more spacing on the floor, and it allows, you know, you to get going a bit more and find your comfort of the game. Game 5, that there wasn't that luxury. In fact, Kem Birch started along with Scotty Barnes and moving from Van Vliet and Birch to Birch and Barnes, like, that's a huge downgrade in spacing. And he didn't get started great, and he was just so patient with the game. Mm-hmm. But the difference between patience and passiveness, it's like, It's something, I don't want to oversimplify, but like, that's where you see the experience of Siakam and not rushing it and not forcing it, but also not deferring.
And almost especially in the wake of that happening in game 3 and him seeming really surprised by it, Yeah. It's like,
and part of it, like, is maybe like Fred going, to a certain degree, Fred going out is like, okay, there's no options now. Like, it's, I need the ball, mm-hmm. you know, 80% of the stuff is going to go through me. Like OG will have his occasional possession. We'll run our occasional, you know, series of pin downs for Gary Trent. But, you know, for the most part, everything is working to get Pascal the ball in an advantageous position, and he can't afford to do that. But, like, he had 7 assists in game 5. The Raptor, you mentioned that the Raptor shot 51% in that game from the field. They shot a little for a lot from 3. And, you know, when you mentioned the offensive rebounds thing, it's like, you know what? Like, for a team that shot 51%, there were some offensive rebounds to grab in that game, and they really didn't. Mm-hmm. But that's because, you know, OG Anunoby shoots 2 for 9, and a few of those are wide open. And, you know, without deep dive in the video for everyone, like, that could have been a playoff triple-double pretty damn easily for Pascal Siakam. And he, the most impressive stat for me from game 5 is Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes combined to play 41 minutes in the second half, and they turned the ball over 0 times.
Yeah. And I figured that was where you were going to go, because it's crazy.
That is, like, the Raptors are a low turnover team, but against, like, a pretty good defense, mm-hmm. with a, you know, one, certainly a great defender, to turn the ball over 0 times, like, there is something to be said about just limiting your mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like that's not what the Raptors want to rely on, I don't think. Like, they want to get more out in the open, but in the absence of totally being able to control that, they really made the right decision so often, whether or not it resulted in an open 3 or not. And, like, I don't want to say, like, the Raptors could have blown him out, because the Sixers also missed a ton of threes. Like, that, mm-hmm. it sort of canceled each other out. But long story long, Pascal Siakam, that was some of the most mature decision-making and game management that I've seen from him since I've started watching.
He just seemed to get better as the game went on. Like, it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't easy in the beginning, but he just kept finding his way through and making the right decisions. And yeah, it was really impressive. And especially, like, with Fred going out, just, you know, not with an injury that, like, us on the outside, when he went out, I think we first assumed it was probably his knee, but just, you know, this hip injury just pops up, he's out, snap your fingers, suddenly it's all on you, Pascal, in a way, you know? And he has taken it in stride, and I just think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and, like, I was pretty critical of Fred and Pascal after game 3, and it wasn't, like, personal. It was like, look at their numbers in the series. They're not good enough. And when you add Pascal's, you know, his bubble and his year in the past, it's fair to have doubts about this guy. I don't think that's hating on him. It's just like, look, this guy's recent playoff track record is not great. And he's in a new position than he was in 2019. And it's fair to wonder about that. But, you know, you don't want to, at some point, enough is enough. But, like, you don't want to close the book on somebody as talented as he is. And, you know, whatever happens the rest of the way in the series, what Pascal Siakam has done in the last 2 games, should serve as a reminder whenever we have this conversation again. And I'm sure we'll have it again, because that's just the way things work. But this guy is capable of truly, you know, excellent playoff performances in not only the number one role, but in the number one without a, you know, playoff tested number 2, which is damn impressive. Before we get too far away from game 5, you asked about the fans, and I was just, Chris Boucher had a very entertaining scrum today. And Kayla Gray of TSN asked, she saw that he was talking to the fans a bit, and Chris Boucher, so what did Chris say? And Chris said, I was just asking where they were going. at the end of the game when the fans were
when leaving. They left.
That was the implication that he said, I feel like a lot of their fans, when we were going to the bench, they were talking reckless, to be honest with you. If they would have won that game, I bet they would have said a lot of stuff. Fortunately, we did. Me and Precious had a good time talking back to them. And you saw, I think you saw Precious sort of asking for the crowd to be loud on Thursday for game six. And I don't want to, like, this isn't a fit, again, not a Sixers podcast. I understand the Sixers' recent track record. And I don't want to, like, tell fans how to behave unless there's some truly vile crap going on. And I didn't see or hear any of that. But, like, if I'm a 76er, and especially because we have that history, or when I say we, I mean Embiid, Doc Rivers, James Harden separately, almost, yeah. Have that history, and you go up 3-0 in the series, and it's the first half, and you're down, like, 12, do I need to hear those boos? Like, it's a bit early for my tasting. Like, I'm not even, I know you're, you know, very against booing the home team. Like, I know. I have, like, I don't recommend it, but, like, I'm also not, like, opposed to it on some moral or fundamental level. But you really want to start when you're up 3-1 in a best of seven and it's the first half? Like, that seemed a bit damaged to me. Like, that's,
I would probably agree with you, except it's Philadelphia and this is what happens in Philadelphia.
No, I get it. But, like, maybe, like, again, I don't want to tell fans how to behave, but, like, maybe examine what you're doing and, like, try to, you know, you're asking these players to grow and you're asking these coaches to grow. Well, like, maybe, you know, the very, you know, the infinitesimal percentage of what you control. And, like, obviously Joel Embiid and Doc Rivers and James Harden have way more to do with the outcome of game five and game six and game seven than any of the fans do. But, you know, you can try to rally them like the Warriors fans often do when their team is down 12 or 14 rather than, you know, booing when James Harden misses a three. I don't know. That's just me.
That's just you. I'm leaving you here on your island.
What? Are you worried for my safety in Philly if there's a game seven?
No, I'm just focused on the Raptors and their fans. That's where I am.
Yeah. And, like, I just thought that, like, I thought that stunk a little bit, but I'm sure Raptors fans had a good time hearing it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We mentioned Chris. I just really quickly wanted to say, I don't know, like, if you were able to notice this in person, but the last two games, there have been close-ups on Chris, and the only term I can use to describe him is locked in. Like, his face, his body demeanor, his body language. Like, I can't even tell you how much Chris Boucher wants this series so badly. Like, he's stepping in, he's getting charges, he's doing, you know, whatever he can, but just, like, his entire demeanor is so locked in that it's just awesome to see.
The really, like, a very basic thing about game five is everybody who played a meaningful minute played, like, at average or above average level for them. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you take, like, sure, OG could have hit a few more shots, but his defense was awesome.
They really wanted it. They came out to take it.
Yeah, you go down the line and there's like Ken Burch, like it's hard to find him minutes in this series, but like those minutes, especially in the first half, but I thought even in the second half, were like good to very good for Ken Burch playing Joel Embiid. And there wasn't a hole to find in the rotation. And, you know, how do you win a series against a team that's more top heavy than you? Or how do you win a game? Forget a series. That's how. You just have every guy step in. You know, the cliche is be a star in your role. And not that every guy was a star in his role, but they were at least good in their roles. And speaking of that, before we, I think we'll get away from individuals after that, Thad Young has been just sensational. You know, after... He's just been really good, like being asked to guard Embiid quite a bit. They're hunting mismatches with Harden on Thad, and not like he's defended every one of those super well. But like, neither Embiid nor Harden is a good matchup defensively for Thad Young. Thad Young is a good defender, but like he's more in like helping than in either guarding the best post player on the planet or like guarding one of the premier passers in the planet. And he has like made them work enough. Mm-hmm. And on the other end is just like, I asked Chris Boucher this, but I'll just invoke it here or evoke it. Still haven't determined where we're coming off on that. Just some Marc Gasol shit in the half court with like, you know, the bounce passes, especially within the zone as he like flashes to the middle and really turned the Sixers zone into something pretty ineffective over the last few games.
Yeah, he's been awesome. I mean, I don't think that either of us would have expected the immediate chemistry that he seemed to have with Chris Boucher. But all around, he's just been giving something every time he's on the floor. And I feel like that sort of goes to your earlier point. It just feels like the Raptors are not making, like you mentioned, not making anything easy for the Sixers with his defense on Harden and Embiid. I think that's been the difference in these past two games, is just the Raptors are being aggressive from the start and not aggressive in the gonna pick up a bunch of early fouls, but they're making the Sixers feel them and making their presence felt. Like they really are just going harder at everything. And I was not shocked in game four, because obviously you're down 3-0, you kind of like, that's, you're either going to come out like that or the series is going to be over. But I have to say, I was surprised with the amount of fight the Raptors had in game five. I was surprised with the lack of punch back that the Sixers had in game
Holly,
five.
Like, beautiful. We don't even have it on the rundown, and this is what I want to ask about, because, you know, the vibes based on the fans, but based on, you know, all that history we alluded to, are not immaculate in Philadelphia right now. There's a clip going around of Doc Rivers defending his playoff record and how he wants the whole story told. Joel Embiid, at both times, like, I think too much was made of this and not enough when he was saying that James Harden needs to be more aggressive, but that's up to coach. Like, for one, like, I don't think he's really wrong, especially given Embiid's injury, but like, you just don't need to say it.
And we've also been down this road before where he has said those exact same things. It's not my job, it's the coach's job. And I get it, he's right, but you don't have to say it. And you especially don't have to say it at this point of the series.
I have a tangent conversation that we can go on for a bit, but James Harden also obviously like shooting better from three than he is for two in this series.
Did you know that OG Anunoby has more points scored in this series than Harden?
I did. I saw that graphic somewhere.
Okay. I didn't realize that. And I saw the tweet last night and I was shocked. It makes sense. Like, when I stop and think about it, of course it makes sense, but I didn't expect that when the series started.
Yeah. I'm just scrolling through my tweets and people have stopped retweeting it. Yesterday, this would have been very handy, but it's something like when OG is on James Harden, there have been like 105 or 110 possessions, something like that. And the Sixers have scored about 75 points in total, which is awesome defense. And I, you know, obviously that's not just OG on Harden. That's a lot of things, but it's a good place to start. It's a good place to start for OG Anunoby. But I've been pretty vocal, I think, in this series and in the past. I don't super believe in momentum in a series. I believe, even though this series has like started from total absolutely Philadelphia and almost in a, you know, direct arc switched like slowly to more Toronto. So like, if you're ever going to believe in momentum, this is the series to believe in, because it's just like slowly gone, maybe not so slowly, but it's gone steadily without incident in the other direction, pretty much. Maybe like the only hiccup was like the moment Joel Embiid hits that shot in game 3. But in general, that's the direction it's going. But how much do you think this stuff matters? The ephemeral history stuff that like is made of, you know, talk shows talk about it nonstop. Mm-hmm. We know that's not what the X's and O's of this series is about, but how much does it matter, I guess?
I think it matters because it matters to the Sixers. You know, I think if they didn't care, like, I think when the Raptors were down 3-0 and all of the talk at that point was a team has never come back from 3-0. It's never been done. It can't be done. Blah, 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 blah. After that, when Nick Nurse had his press conference, I don't know if it was after the game or the next day, you can clarify, but he said, so 3-0 has never been done before. Take it one game at a time. Get it to 3-1. 3-1 has been done before. Yeah. And it's kind of like a joke, you know, like just then
it's
you
just,
can
it's
do
just
it.
It's just a shift of perspective, right?
But like, I feel like the Raptors really believed that. Like, I feel like they really dug into that and believed in that. And then when you heard Fred talk at the morning shoot-around of Game 5, when he said, you know, a lot of people don't believe in us being able to do this, but I really do. And if, you know, when he said the thing about, I'll feel good if, like, I feel like I would be good to play if we make it to the next round. Like, he was very clearly just talking like, we believe we can do this. I think that when you believe separately from the outside, it doesn't matter. You know, so no matter what people were saying on the outside, that didn't affect the Raptors. And who knows what'll happen in Game 6 and beyond, but they managed to, you know, turn this into a series again because they weren't affected by it. But if you look at the Sixers and the history that they have and all of the conversation is happening, even the way, like you mentioned Doc talking about his playoff record, what he said at the end of that was, I forget the exact phrase, I wish I had it in front of me, but it was like, we just have to do it and then we won't talk about it anymore. But it didn't sound like it was, yeah, we're good, like, it's not a concern to us. It was, if we do this, then we don't have to talk about it anymore. As he was also trying to like
defend himself. Yeah.
Like it definitely felt like, it feels like a more of a thing that is affecting that fan base, franchise, you know. And again, maybe they'll come out tomorrow, have a killer game, and the series will be over and that'll be that. But I think with momentum, I usually, like you, am not a big fan. I just don't think in the playoffs that it holds up the way that people think it does. However, when you have the histories that team and some of the players do, I think it just depends on how the team and the players and the coach approach it, I guess is the right word.
And you want to know when it really might matter is game 7 if they're losing by 10. Like, I would
with your fans.
With my fans, yeah. My fans, they're mine. quick sidebar before we get to game 6.
Sorry, that was really long-winded, but do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Like,
okay.
I like, the one thing is, like, they're asked about it, they have to address it, so, like, but, you know, we're not the only people saying that. Like, everybody who has covered the Sixers not everybody, but a lot of people are just like, yeah, like the Raptor, the Raptors are need to make the Sixers think about it. And
I also thought it was interesting.
The Sixers are firmly thinking about it now, and they have to confront it, which maybe it's the best thing that will ever happen to them, or maybe it will be terrible. The Raptors
are a Joel Embiid last second three-pointer heave away from the series being tied right now.
Well, so there's that game still would have been tied, but I take your point, yes.
Well, sorry, would have been tied, but I feel
a Precious
like
Achiuwa free throw, let's say.
Sure. So very, very, very easily could have been a tied series right now, coming back to Toronto with a game with the series tied. Mm. After game five, Doc, I'm pretty sure it had to have been game five. Doc was asked about his team, and he said something that was like, I wish I had the quote in front of me. This is why I should print these quotes out. I didn't plan to go down this because it wasn't on the rundown. Anyway, he basically said something to the extent of, I just feel like our guys didn't bring it the past two games, yeah, but they will. And it was like, yeah. Okay, but when you're up 3-0, when is the switch gonna, like, Why did you flip the switch off, you know?
Yeah, and I've thought a lot about that Raptors Magic series from the title year, and these Raptors are better than that Magic team, so that's part of it. But, like, you remember the start to that game five at home? Like, the Raptors just stepped on
this them. Is done. It's yeah. done. Yeah,
and there is, whether it's Embiid's thumb, whether it's Harden's attitude, whether it's just the team's vibes, whatever it is, and it's probably, you know, a little bit of some and a lot of some of that, like in different proportions, but like, I don't think the Sixers have that.
Is it not crazy to you that there's a game six happening in Toronto on Thursday, 24 hours away? And it feels like it's not an elimination game. It absolutely is. Like, I absolutely know that.
Well, yeah, this is what I'm in the process of writing. Like, the Raptors are in, like, again, might not matter, but, like, they're in, like, the way more enviable pressure situation.
It's like
that's hilarious because they lose and their season is over. But,
yeah,
you know,
it's not like we're not unaware of that or saying that it won't happen, because it very well could. Joel have a great game. It could. But it just feels like the most low-pressure game six I've seen from Raptors fans on the outside.
And as Ida Maria once sang, expectations are such a drag. Quick sidebar, because I said I didn't love how Embiid handled that Harden bit with, you know, the aggressiveness and deferring to Doc Rivers. Let's, like, consider top 15, maybe top 20 players, like, bona fide superstars in this league. How many of them are also, like, awesome leaders, like, 95 to 100% of the time? Like, let's count them out.
Start. Steph?
Steph and Giannis are, like, the only two no-doubters I can come with. I think Lillard is probably on there. And then it gets tricky.
I think DeMar's a great teammate.
I'm not sure he's top 15 to 20, but this year he was.
I know what you're saying.
This year he was. Okay. But I think he is a great teammate. But
you're putting LeBron on there?
No. He's too bad when things go wrong.
No,
like,
I just wanted your reaction. I wasn't asking.
Like, I think that might be the list. Now, like, maybe Ja Morant is on it. There's not enough of a sample size right now. Like, who else would you rather, you know, fight with, you know?
You're not gonna put the Rudy Donovan Mitchell tandem on there?
No, I think I'm gonna pass. You know, Jokic might be on there.
Jokic is always really, like, really good with crediting his teammates and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It's an
my
interesting
point
question.
Is it's
you
a
say
short
it.
It's a short list because, like,
yeah,
there are so many sports in which, like, the best players and their leadership are conflated.
I put DeJounte Murray on that list. I don't know where he fits.
He's not in the, like, because, like, Fred's on that list too, right? But, like, I don't think Fred is a top 15 player, and I don't think DeJounte Murray is a top 15 player. So,
well, they're both top 15 in my heart. So
I know,
they're on
I
my
know,
list.
But you have 45 in your top 15 in your heart. So I get
probably
that.
20, But no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, for sure. It is a very special combination when you have a player that,
and even some of the guys I mentioned like have taken crap for how they carry themselves before. I just think like they're sort of unimpeachable at this point about their leadership. Mm-hmm. And my only point is that the list is very, very short. And there are more like stars, and maybe this is just the product of basketball and we scrutinize these guys and think we can psychoanalyze them too much. But there are just more basketball guys, whether it's LeBron, whether it's like, you know, certainly Kyrie, but like Kevin Durant's like brand of like kind of aloofness. And I really like Kevin Durant.
Did you hear Kyrie's quote about the
media scrums? He and Kev are going to manage the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Harden, another one, like, you know, people.
I just love when people call Kevin Durant Kev. I'm sorry. It's like my favorite thing. Me and Kev. It just makes him sound so cash.
Anyway, the point is, I don't want to make it seem like Joel Embiid is off on an island as like the worst leader ever here.
Hey,
like,
man, it's really hard to have all the pressure on you because you're an amazingly talented player, and it's great to have those accolades and, you know, you want the ball and all of that. But then when things don't go your way, that's often all on you too. And sometimes it's probably pretty frustrating to be like, I can't control the other four people who are on the court with me. You weren't criticizing him. That's what it made me think of.
And I was like a bit surprised how short the list was. That's all. Game six. What are your vibes?
Vibes are cool. I'm sure I'll be a wreck when the game starts. Like every 2-0 run will make my stomach lurch, but feel a lot better about game six than I did about game three.
I definitely had to convince you of reason why the series could change.
Yeah, you definitely did. And maybe that's why I'm so chill, because I'm just like, well, I've already like worried and stressed and was upset, and well, hey, it's 3-2 now.
Just a lesson not to get stuck in a moment, especially during a playoff series, because these things, as my psychiatrist always says, nothing stays the same. Everything's always changing.
Listen, man, coaching the NBA, you got to be level and even keeled. Never get too high, never get too low. I hate when NBA players give me that cliche
when I'm interviewing them,
but it's true. It's a cliche for a reason, and I would be a terrible NBA coach for many reasons, but most of all because after a loss, I would think the world was ending, and my players would absolutely feel that. So,
how high on the list of cliches is it's a cliche for a reason?
Pretty high.
It's a top five cliche.
What's your favorite playoff cliche? I know Will and Alex at the Will Lou Raptor show were doing like playoff cliches.
Yeah, no, I saw that. Like, it's not a series until the road team wins is probably the best one. Until the home team
loses, yeah.
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 Or the road team wins, yeah. Like, that's the... Makes no sense because, like, in this series,
that game only, yeah,
like that made it 3-0, and that in theory again
is the
ended the series. So like, it was the moment they won, it became a lot less of a series. So like, it's my favorite cliche because it's actually like demonstrably not true. I understand what it's saying, but like, it does not hold up beyond like the first 3% of like.
And also the home team doesn't need to win on the road. It just needs to win its home games.
Yeah. So does
the home
like
team could lose every road game and still win the series. So.
Yeah. Did that series never begin?
It didn't happen. A road team doesn't lose, did
yeah, if a tree falls lose? In the woods, I see what you're trying to do. So I'm predicting, I hate to do it, a Philadelphia win. I think Joel Embiid is going to have a monster game.
Yeah.
But I also thought that Philadelphia was going to win game five, so you shouldn't take this that seriously. Do you want to put your thoughts on
the table? Yeah, I'm predicting a Raptors win, but I'm worried about James Harden. I don't know if that is just my, like...
Well, he's a very good player, and he's been pretty bad in the last few games.
He hasn't had a great series, and I think Joel will give everything he has, but I feel like if there's a player that may break out, that's sort of where I'm like, that would be bad. But yeah, I'm still gonna say Raptors win. I have to be honest. I don't know how much of that is my heart and how much of that is my brain.
I know.
They're twisted right now.
We've talked about that throughout the year, how I think you're sometimes predicting things that you don't
But really, no,
believe.
this time I'm telling you.
You're being
that.
Open about it. I understand. Yeah.
I wasn't not being open about it before.
I think you just weren't fully encountering it. And the magnitude of the playoffs is really making you more aware of how much you're feeling.
I'm feeling too much is what I'm feeling. But yes, I think that there will be a game 7 to talk about next week.
Well, we'll probably won't talk to you before game 7. And because game 7 takes place on Saturday, it's not next week. But we will talk to you after the series one way or the other. Hopefully it's to set up a series against Miami. That'd be neat. Ugh, although is your heart
ready
for that?
Also, get well soon, Kyle.
Is your heart ready for that if it happens?
Absolutely. My nerves are steel. I'm great.
Because, you know, before the regular season ended, you were like swearing off any potential series between the Raptors and Miami or Chicago.
Yeah, I'm over it. It's fine. Bring it on.
yeah, that's sort of the attitude of the Raptors, too. Bring on Game 6. Should be fun. Hope everybody's enjoying it. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast such as it was. Holly, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you at some point in the intermediate future. Thanks for listening. See ya!